Brad, he's in our Touchpoints Rehab Interview Chair this morning. 13th District State Senator Len Susio, also a member of the legislature's Judiciary Committee. Senator, as always, good morning and welcome to Brad and Dan.
Good morning, and I just want to begin by thanking you for that great debate we had last week with Tony Guerrero. I never had so much fun in a radio interview in my life.
He's a character, too.
Oh, he is.
And so are you.
Well, you know, it's the way politics is supposed to be. You can have differences of opinion and really get into it, but it never gets personal. It actually is kind of fun to have a debate when people are on the other side of an issue. You can really go at it, and it was. I just tell you, I enjoyed myself thoroughly, and thanks for the opportunity to participate in that and to educate your audience at the same time. You guys do a fantastic job keeping your audience informed.
Well, thank you, Senator, and it was a fun morning for sure. Now, let's hope they don't put the tolls in, but we'll save that for another day.
We're going to do our best to stop that.
Good. Now, we have this issue with 27-year-old Stephen Elam, who crashed into the Middlesex Hospital ER with his car last week, and police say he did this intentionally, and apparently he's got a rap sheet a mile long. What's going on here?
Yes, he does. He does have a history going back to, I think it's 2008, a series of assaults and other types of crimes that he's been convicted of and incarcerated for. And he was another one of the graduates of Governor Malloy and Mike Lawler's a school of social etiquette for criminals, I guess you could call it. The early release program is what I call it.
It's ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Yes. He received 77 days of risk reduction credits when he participated in the program. But as soon as he was out from jail, within 2 months, he was back and was arrested for assault. And I look and I think to myself, he was on probation at that time. He had been released early from prison, and here he is engaged in another violent crime, and he's let go. As soon as he posts bond or bail, he's out free again to roam around, and of course it's terribly unfortunate that he drove the car into the hospital. It looked to me like he was having some kind of either a very bad drug trip or some kind of psychotic episode, but he was definitely.
And then he lights himself on fire.
Yeah. I mean, and I don't know how it was pretty bad. I understand he's down at the Bridgeport burn unit. There's been tens of thousands of criminals released from our prisons early under this so-called risk reduction program, and it does anything but reduce risk. And when I looked back at the statistics earlier this year, and in the first 6+ years of this program, we released about 40,000 or so criminals early who would participate in it, and they returned to a life of crime, and I'm talking about the serious crimes. They committed over 12,700 crimes in that interval that involved rape, murder, kidnapping, strangulation, go on and on and on. And that amounts to, Dan and Brad, are you sitting down? That amounts to 6 violent crimes per day. As an average, committed by criminals who have participated in the so-called risk reduction program, but obviously it's not doing much to reduce risk. It's, if anything, it's making it worse for our communities. It's a program that's got to change, and both of you have been kind enough to let me on your show a number of times over the last 6 years railing against this program and calling for reform, and we do have a bill which is being developed right now to go in front of the Judiciary Committee, which I hope at the very least will be a small start in reforming the program and adding a number of other crimes that are currently eligible to not be eligible for early release.
Let me ask you a very simple question. What does it take to convince leadership that they were wrong? I mean, come on here.
Well, I think what it takes is what you, Brad, and Dan are doing right now. We've got to expose to the public the horrific failure and the horrific crimes are being committed by these criminals that are supposedly reformed and supposedly a reduced risk to the community. There's been 119 murders committed after these inmates were released from prison, and they went out again and killed people. There's been 154 rapes. If you calculate that out, that's one rape or murder every 8 days since the program began, committed by a graduate of the risk reduction program. We just got to keep it up. And the media, for whatever reason, you get something here or there. But the media, I don't think, have been slow to recognize what a catastrophic failure this program has
been. They haven't.
Was the Hartford Current at your news conference that you had on this last month? I know that I didn't read a story in the paper about it.
No,
I might have missed it.
They weren't there. Governor Malloy coincidentally called a news conference right after mine was over,
right,
and the press were running over there to get ready for his news conference. So some people question whether that was delivered or not.
Yeah, that was the day he released the budget, which normally he delivers when the legislative session opens, and he chose to release it 2 days early, coincidentally.
Yeah, just coincidence, of course. We've got to keep the light shined on this so the public's aware of it. And the only way you can get real change is from public pressure, Brad and Dan, and informing the public about what a catastrophic failure this is. Literally, you guys could have me on the show every couple of days pointing out another horrific crime that's been committed. These are not pickpockets we're talking about. We're talking about people who are engaged in violent crime and have assaulted raped. We're talking hundreds and thousands.
Well, what are they? They've got to react to this, though. The governor has got to react, and the folks that work for him in this plan. I mean, how can he just continue?
They're not going to react, Brad. He's writing out his last year, and he's not going to react to this, Senator. I don't see it happening.
Yeah, their response is the old razzle-dazzle, basically. It's, hocus-pocus. Oh, crime is down in Connecticut. Well, of course, we decriminalize a lot of things, and we're the prisons are empty or reduced population, but again, we're letting them go by the boatloads. Thousands of them are going out early, supposedly because they've been reformed, but we know now. I mean, 6 years.
Well, Senator, hang in there, because I'm going to share a couple of stories with you when we come back. We have a traffic update, Brad, and then we'll be back with Senator Susio. Brad, back in our Touchpoints Rehab interview, Chair of State Senator Len Susio. Senator Elliot Canales, 29 years of age, convicted of killing a Waterbury pedestrian as she was crossing the street 2 years ago, hit and run. They finally nabbed him when he came back from Florida. Depending on which story you read, News Channel 8 reported that he was sentenced to 10 years in jail. The Republican American had him sentenced to 5 years in jail. But the point is, will he be eligible under the risk credit reduction program?
Yes. In fact, all but 8 crimes are eligible for early release credit. So some of the crimes that are eligible are shocking. Again, you can get into sexual assault of a child. And if you're talking about that kind of a crime, has an incredibly high recidivism rate, and they're incredibly dangerous people to let back out in the street. They're a threat to our children. And it's just ridiculous. Up until 2 years ago, there were 2 crimes. One was persistent dangerous felony offender, and another one was persistent dangerous sex offender. They were eligible for early release. But because we kept the spotlight on this thing, they added those 2 crimes 2 years ago after 5 years of experience, basically. And it's hard to believe that persistent dangerous offenders were eligible for early release, because by definition they were repeat offenders. They had a high degree of recidivism, but nonetheless they were anxious to spring these dangerous criminals out of jail early. What they're doing is they're trying to reduce the cost of operating our prisons, and they've shut down one or two already. They have plans for closing more down, and it's the money that's driving it, I think, as much as anything else. And unfortunately, we're paying for it with human life, and there's no value you can put on that.
You know, and again, when criminals are released, the majority head for the cities.
Yes, yes.
The majority head for the cities, and you know what that means.
You know, Brad, I was meeting with some DOC officers a couple of years ago, and they were telling me the story about how they had to transport an inmate who was about to be released. They transported him to the middle of Waterbury. He was shackled in the car, and they had armed guards, and they let him out in the middle of Waterbury to freedom roam around to the public. Yet he was so dangerous, they had him shackled in the van they were transporting him in, and they had armed guards on it. So, I mean, they told me that, and I thought, you got to be kidding me. Is this real, or are we in a Monty Python kind of world? It's just the whole business of criminal justice in Connecticut needs to be revisited. The criminals are out of prison before their victims are out of the hospital half the time. And it's an upside-down world. There's more sympathy, apparently, in this administration for the criminals whom they want to give second chances to and third chances to, but the victims don't have a second or third chance. It's time to rethink this through, and hopefully when we get a new administration next year, this program will be completely revisited and, I hope, radically changed to have the public's interest in mind and make certain that our number one responsibility to protect the public from would-be violent criminals, that's our number one responsibility, and we've got to change this program.
Senator, how about an 11-chance society? There's this Torrington resident who the taxpayers were paying his rent, by the way, convicted for an 11th time. The judge sentenced him to 5 years in jail, and the state got back to the judge and said, no, because of the second chance society, you've got to resentence him to a less of a prison term. This is unbelievable, Senator.
Yeah, and you know what, Dan? It's not the exception to the rule, unfortunately. There was a criminal arrested last year who broke into a woman's apartment in Hartford who had been in and out of prison over 100 times. And it's like you gotta be kidding me. You think this is made up, but it's real. It's sad to say, I do believe in redemption and people can reform their lives, but you're talking about hardened convicts, hardened criminals who have had their whole life, adult life, they've been involved in violent crime, and it's very hard for them to change, and we should not be letting them out in the street, prematurely in particular. And I look, the only thing that risk reduction does is it changes criminal behavior in prison because they want to get out early, but the incentive is gone. Once they're out of prison, they're free out there to roam our neighborhoods. And again, when I think about the 119 murders, the 154 rapes over the 6 years, again, that's one of those crimes every 8 days committed by criminals who had participated in a program that supposedly was reforming their lives, but obviously was a failure. And I think of the men and women who have paid for it, and even a little baby. You guys know the Arthur Hapgood situation. He stabbed a baby to death. He went on a drug rampage, and he killed a little baby girl. And he was someone who had graduated from the early release program. It's not working. We've got to keep the pressure on, and it's the only thing that's going to change it is constant public pressure. And you guys are fantastic in getting the word out. At least your listening audience is aware of it, and I think the rest of the media are waking up to it. Some of the TV stations are now getting on to this thing, and that's when I think the public will really become outraged.
Channel 3 did something. They did a very good investigative report on it.
Oh, Erin Connolly's got done a series on it, and I know she's interviewed some of the inmates that have been released who actually have criticism of the program itself. And I don't know when she plans on airing that, but I know she's got some very interesting stories coming up, too.
Now, Senator, as you know, and you're on the Judiciary Committee, there's a big hearing today on the nomination of Justice Andrew McDonald to be the next Chief Justice of the Connecticut State Supreme Court. And he was very instrumental in getting the death penalty outlawed in Connecticut. I'm hoping, and this is just a hope, that one member of that Judiciary Committee would ask him how he feels about this now, and God forbid, had Nicholas Cruz committed this crime in Connecticut, would he feel comfortable knowing that Cruz would not be eligible for capital punishment?
I am certain he's going to be asked questions about that today because, you know, within our caucus, we've talked about some of the concerns that my fellow caucus members have about his record. We're not talking about anything else. We're talking about his record as a jurist and his record as a public servant. And there's definitely plenty of questions are going to be asked today. And I know there's a lot of reluctance in terms of supporting him for this nomination, but we're going to give him a fair hearing. We're going to give him a chance to explain himself and what he was thinking when he's done things like this, and then we'll make a decision about it. I expect it's going to be a close vote.
How long will it take before you'll make a decision?
Oh, well, first of all, the Judiciary Committee, I believe, will vote on it today, and they'll either recommend it or not recommend it to the legislature, and then assuming he gets through that, then I would think in the next week or two he will be voted on in the Senate and then in the House.
Now, does it have to be approved by both bodies in order for him to get elevated to the Chief Justice?
You know, that's a good question. I'm not certain. I think it does, but I will check on that, Dan. I don't know.
Because the Senate, as we know, is an 18-18 tie, so you don't know what happens in the Senate.
Right, and another interesting question is, suppose it is 18-18. Usually the lieutenant governor casts a tie-breaking vote when it comes to legislation, but I don't know if that's true when it comes to judicial nominees. If it's not true, an 18-18 tie wouldn't be adequate for him to get the nomination approved. So that's another interesting question. See, look, you guys not only are provocative to your audience, you're provocative to your interviewees. I'm gonna check those out, and I'll find out the answer later on today.
Thank you.
This is something that we've been talking about.
Well, the left, let's face it, the left is going to make this all a big deal about any legitimate questions of Justice McDonald, he used to be senator, will be along the lines of, well, you're attacking him because he's gay. And that's not the case at all, Senator.
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, I've never heard one mention of his sexual orientation when we talk about his qualifications or his nomination for the court. It's all about his record, and he's got a long record now. He's been in the public office either as a senator or as a justice now for 5 years. So it's fair game to look at his record and what his jurisprudence is, what his judicial philosophy is. He and I did meet last week one-on-one. He asked him to meet with me. We had an hour conversation in my office, and I will say it was a pleasant and it was a fun and interesting and a lively conversation. I asked him questions about his history, his voting history, and what his judicial thinking is. There's going to be some real controversial cases coming up. You know, the school funding issues continue to be
a big issue in Connecticut.
And so his judicial philosophy is still, I think, open to question. And I'm certain there'll be a lot of questions about that today. And no one I know is even thinking about whatever his sexual orientation is. It's all about what his record is and what his judicial philosophy is.
Okay. Well, Senator,
thanks a million.
You've got a busy day ahead.
Oh, yes. I got a long one. I told my wife, keep the dinner in the refrigerator. I'll be home late tonight.
I'm glad you had the chance to come by and talk with Dan and myself, though.
I tell you what, Brad and Dan, that was, again, by far the most fun interview I can ever remember doing, and it is different when you're in studio. It's a lot of fun because you can. Well, you guys saw the hand gestures going on ahead.
Thanks, Senator.
Have a great day, gentlemen.
Good
you
luck.
Too. Take
good
care.
Luck.